From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If Greece's relationship with the rest of Europe were a primetime soap opera, what would it be? Scandal? How to get away with murder? Either way, Greece's stunning no vote on the EU bailout plan over the weekend, the country and the continent are in new and frightening terrain, the only certainty being that more hardship is on the way. But what kind of pain will it be, and how much pain is enough? Is either Greece or the rest of Europe willing to step back and think about what each side brought to the breakdown? This hour, On Point, Europe and Greece search for a way forward. You can join us on air or online. Who do you blame for the crisis? Greece for overspending? Europe for taking austerity too far? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. To bring us up to date, we want to start in Athens, Greece, with John Zoropoulos. He's an independent reporter and analyst who blogs at thenewathenian.com, and he contributes to The Daily Beast and NPR. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, Michelle. My pleasure.
Now, as we are speaking now, what's the atmosphere there? I mean, as we are speaking at this very moment, it's at the end of the business day, but the banks have been closed for days. Can people buy food or medicine or basic supplies if they need to? Does it feel like a crisis?
Well, it does feel like a crisis, but remember, this has been a slow-burning crisis for many years, and there are different stages to it. The last stage has been very dramatic, the closure of banks, the capital controls. We're not seeing shortages of food yet, but it's only a question of time because importers aren't able to remit money abroad as quickly as they would like. There's a committee that's been set up to do that, but that's difficult. It's judged on a case-by-case basis, and there are thousands of applications. What we are seeing is that people are now using up the savings that they've been drawing on. They do have, most people do have some cash already at home. Many people are relying on the capital controls level of cash that they're still able to draw, 50 or 60 euros a day. Things are ticking over. Things haven't exploded into full-blown crisis. We don't have a social crisis yet. We don't have social unrest. We don't have shortages of food. But this is just, as I said, a stage. I mean, the next stage people expect is that there will be a haircut on their accounts in the banks. People have been preparing for that, too. They've been breaking up their money into different smaller accounts, I've heard from various accountants. And people are also, at this point, not paying taxes. They've frozen their tax declarations for 2014 income. They're just waiting to see what's going to happen. Because if the state goes belly up, if there's a full-blown default, people may actually hold on to more of their money than they planned to do just in order to survive.
Well, it seems that there was a lot of euphoria over the weekend after the weekend's vote against the new bailout conditions. Let me just play a short clip of that just to give people a sense of the flavor of it. And I also wanted just to play another clip of an interview with the BBC on Sunday night, where a man was explaining why he was celebrating the referendum. Let me just play that.
There's no money, but little by little we'll be okay. We were hungry before, and now we'll stay hungry. But at least we stood up today to Angela Merkel.
Who's, of course, the Chancellor of Germany, who's considered kind of the key player in this. Do people still feel that way, John? They still feel, okay, yes, I'm going to suffer, but, you know, at least I stood up for whatever reason, national pride or for other reasons. Is that still the feeling, or has another sense of foreboding come in?
Well, I think the foreboding is always there. Sometimes it's on top and sometimes it's the undercurrent. But I think you're absolutely right. The Sunday referendum did serve as a moment of clarity of self-expression, which gratified the Greeks. They know that they're going to have difficult times ahead either way. On Saturday, the day before the referendum, I asked a kiosk owner, which way are you going to vote, yes or no? And he held up his two middle fingers in the air, and he said, we're going to have difficulties one way or the other. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a choice. A lot of people have said that to me. Greeks are not in any illusion anymore, under any illusions about what lies ahead. They don't feel that if they rebuff European demands for austerity, that miraculously everything's going to be okay. they realize the economy is messed up and that they have to turn their own country around themselves. So I think this referendum was more a question of asserting sovereignty, and that's what they found so gratifying about it, rather than imagining that there is some kind of magical ladder that's going to lift them out of the crisis.
Now I'd like to bring in a voice from Germany, which, as we said, has become the de facto leader of the negotiations over the Eurozone. Christian Rickens joins us from Hamburg. He's the head of the business and economic desk at Spiegel Online. That's the online service of the weekly news magazine Der Spiegel, which is one of Europe's most influential magazines. Christian, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Hello, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Now, I asked John what was the atmosphere in Greece. I'm going to ask you the same question. What's the atmosphere in Germany around this issue? Is this a top-of-the-mind issue in Germany? Certainly, it is among the political leadership and among the political and business elite. But what about, you know, regular people? Is it common discussion on the news?
It has become it, yes. During the weekend, we had a perfect summer weekend in Germany and a lot of barbecues going on. And I think at every barbecue was the topic of the day, this referendum and how we should proceed with our relations to Greece. And yes, it was certainly a topic.
What was the tone of those discussions, if you can describe them for me? And I understand that that's difficult to do, you know, summarize the sentiments of an entire country. But I know you weren't able to sample all of the barbecues. But what's your sense of it?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, before the referendum, it was about a 2/3 majority in favor of a Grexit that said, like, let's end it here. And well, we have given enough money to Greece, and they should just leave the Eurozone. That was before the referendum, and I'm afraid after the referendum, of course, there are no polls so far. But my feeling is that the majority in favor of a Grexit is even larger now. So that really this referendum, yeah, was like another milestone, and Germany now says, they don't want our money, so they should see where they get it on their own.
You know, to that end, though, let me play another clip. This is from the president of the European Parliament, Martin Schulz, who is also German. Let me just tell you what he said.
We are in a difficult situation. The Greek people said no, but 18 other members of the Eurozone agreed about the proposals to which the Greek people said no. But this is democracy in Greece.
And I'm going to ask each of you about that. John, I'll ask you this first, that, you know, the Germans are saying, and the European Parliament is saying, this is not just Germany calling for these sanctions or for these new conditions. This is the rest of Europe. Do the Greeks accept that? Do they see it that way?
Well, it's become more that way over time, because our recently departed Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis has spent the last 6 months offending Northern Europe so much that he's managed to unite everyone against Greece. I remind you that on the 25th of June, at the last Eurogroup meeting he attended, he was ejected from the second session of that Eurogroup meeting, which was the one that decided unanimously to reject Greece's application, his application, in fact, to extend the Greek financial aid program beyond the 30th of June. All 18 members except Greece signed that, and that remains the position today. So Greece, make no mistake, is going back into a hornet's nest in today's Eurogroup. There is no affection for a country that has not only failed for the last 6 months to come up with a plan to save itself, but has also insulted its creditors and European partners. Mr. Varoufakis has called Northern European finance ministers economic terrorists and blackmailers. So it's going to take a very long time to turn that around, to turn that relationship back around and to mend it.
But Christian, a question to you. We're seeing, though, that there is starting to be some pushback among the other countries, well, at least among the left-wing political parties who actually agree with Greece that austerity has gone too far. And in this country, for example, one of the influential economic columnists, Paul Krugman, wrote a piece in the New York Times, which is, of course, a very influential newspaper in this country, that suggested that perhaps the Greeks had a point, that austerity had gone too far. He compared the terms to, say, the medieval medieval doctors who were bleeding the patients to achieve when they were sick, and then when they got sicker to bleed them more. Is that starting to cause some reflection where you are? Are you seeing that? Has this unnerved the political establishment at all? Could this affect negotiations going forward?
So actually, I have to say that I fully agree with Paul Krugman here. And I think that Greek would have needed a full debt relief back in 2012. The way that the crisis was dealt with was clearly also wrong from the German side or from the side of the creditors in general. But we must not forget that, for example, Martin Schulz, you just played his quote, he's also one of the left-wing politicians in Germany, and he's also one of the most pro-European politicians. And I'm afraid that even this fraction is now a little bit fed up with Greece. So it's not the hardliners anymore who are now in favor of a Brexit, because they have been in favor of it in the first place. Now it's even like the progressives, the left-wing politicians like Martin Schulz, the pro-Europeans who say, yeah, enough is enough. And I'm very sorry for that, because I would have loved things develop in a different way. And I think if Greece had voted yes on the weekend, it would have been very easy for Greece to negotiate a third aid package, to negotiate some sort of a debt relief. If a country actually says, yes, we want to stay in the euro, yes, we will accept reforms to do so, it's very, very hard to push them away. So I think this no from Greece was exactly the wrong signal to get a solution that is viable for both Greece and for the rest of the Eurozone.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the crisis around Greece. The economy there has been in a tailspin, and voters there have just rejected a bailout plan offered by its European partners. Just for some insight into why, here's Greece's Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras speaking to the nation after the no vote against the EU's bitter economic medicine. His country's message was essentially a version of don't tread on me.
There are no winners and losers. It is a great victory on its own. Today, all of us have created a glorious page in European history. We have proven that even under the most difficult situation, democracy cannot be blackmailed.
My guests are in Athens, John Sauropoulos. He's a reporter and analyst who blogs on TheAthenian.com and contributes to NPR. In Hamburg, Christian Rickens is head of the business and economic desk at Germany Spiegel Online. We're talking about how things look in Europe today as the Greek economy heads toward default. And you can join the conversation. Have you got a personal stake in this? Do you have relatives in Greece or in the rest of Europe? And what are they telling you? And do you fear that the instability will spread to the U.S. in the same way that the American meltdown of 08 spread to Europe? John, can I ask you if people in Greece care about what people in the U.S. think about this? There are, of course, close ties. Many people have relatives abroad. I'm assuming that remittances and visits go back and forth. Do people care about the American point of view?
Well, there have long been two conspiracy theories about the American role in all of this. One is that America looks with pleasure upon the troubles of the Eurozone because it wishes to demote the euro as the world's second reserve currency, fearing that it may one day threaten the dollar. And the other conspiracy theory is that Americans are going to press Merkel ultimately into saving Greece because Americans don't like to see the Greeks being bullied by the Germans. To what extent either one is true, I think, is difficult to tell. I think America has mostly stood by as a rather helpless observer.
And how is that viewed? How has that role been viewed? I know you're giving what some of the theories are, but is there a desire? And perhaps there's a difference of opinion on the part of the political leadership and the public at large. Do you see a difference of opinion in there about what they would like the American role to be?
Well, yes, the Greeks want the Americans to ride in on a white horse and save Greece. There's a very strong historical alliance between the United States and Greece. In fact, Bill Clinton talked about it, the last U.S. president to visit this country back in 1999. He stood up and said, Greece is the only country that has fought alongside America in every single American war since World War II. And that's the kind of thing that Greeks like to hear, because they like to hear Greek loyalty to the United States acknowledged. But ultimately, they're also beginning to realize that this is a European game. It's a different world now. America is no longer dominant enough to step into European financial and monetary affairs and fix them. Mm.
Let's hear some opinions from the callers and the listeners and to see what they say about that. So let's go to Enemy. If I'm pronouncing that correctly? Oh, sorry, Enemy.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, yes. You're calling from Charlotte, Vermont.
Yes, and before anything, I totally appreciate your questions, Michelle. I've listened to you the last couple of days. It's very good.
Well, thank you.
I have two observations and one question. One is, my brother goes to a small island, a Greek island, we're not Greek, every year, and he observed that this time it was incredibly stressed. The landlady who earlier visited, she would have a cup of coffee in the morning with her. Now she's out at 6 in the morning. She comes back at midnight, deep rings under her eyes. Everybody is totally stressed. Two, people don't even want to take Visa cards anymore. It's hard to buy anything, because if you don't bring enough cash, you are stranded. Then the other observation is that my brother said, that it's the young people who have most solidarity with Greece. That's speaking from Vienna, from Europe. And the third point is that I think there are two economic cultures, one a Mediterranean and one a Northern European, and they don't seem to be compatible. And this is what I want to ask your panel, if there's anything to that.
That is an interesting question. Do you mind, Enemy, if we hold that question? Because I want to hear more about that later, and we have another guest coming in, and I want to hear her take on that as well. Let me take another couple of calls. Jack is calling from Montreal, Canada. Jack, hello.
Yes, hi, Michelle. I just want to first make a point and an observation. I think the German banks were practicing predatory lending as far as Greece was concerned. So I think that the German banks are not completely blameless as far as this mess is concerned. So they want their money back, and so do the French banks to a certain extent. But that's okay. That's their business, to make money and then lend it at extortionist rates, and then they want it back. The problem is now it's a political issue, and Germany, I think, doesn't understand that their policies, offering ultimatums to Greece to take the tax.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry. We're losing Jack for some reason. We're having some technical problems with your line. But I think we take your point that, so Christian, why don't you take that question? I think he's saying that he sees that the banks is having some responsibility. Okay.
To the German banks, and yes. I think he also mentioned the French banks and the banks lending to Greece in general. And of course, when we moved back to 2012, there was this question: should Greece get a haircut on its debt? So should the debt be reduced? And the banks they lobbied very hard for a very soft haircut, so that they would not lose too much of their money, and that also the other Eurozone states, they would step in and take over the debt. So and they succeeded with that, and that's very unfortunate. So they really managed to socialize the losses and privatize the gains. And so that's really the root of the problem we are seeing now. So I wouldn't say it's restricted to German banks. It's also been in American banks, but generally this is true. The financial industry did a very good job at pulling themselves out of the Greek debt crisis after they have earned their share from it.
And we will acknowledge that our previous caller was using some loaded language that some might disagree with, but calling the terms, I forget the term that he used, and I know that some people would take issue with that. But let me bring in another guest here. Let's bring in a third voice from Washington, D.C., and this is Shahrazad Rahman. She's director of the European Union Research Center and a professor of international business at George Washington University, and she studied national defaults and bailouts around the world, and she's been watching this crisis since it began. So, Shahrazad, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Before the earlier caller had a question about the sort of different economic cultures, and I was interested in your perspective on that. But before we get to that, what's your overall take on the situation, on the crisis?
Well, I mean, I think the previous two speakers have sort of put, you know, a good light on this. You know, it's just going to get worse. And by worse, I mean, you've got a good decade of pain ahead of you. You know, Cyprus is now coming into the meeting today, trying to clean up and be the hero of the day of a mess he himself has created. This referendum was regrettable for the future of Greece. I'll give you a quick example. The IMF could not back out of the deal for last week when they missed the $1.6 billion payment. After the referendum, they've made it absolutely impossible for the IMF to negotiate, because the IMF doesn't reverse its policy just because a country holds a national referendum and says, we don't want to pay. So, you know, I think there's a lot more bumpy roads ahead of us. On July 20th, which is less than 2 weeks away, there's a $3.5 billion payment to the European Central Bank that has to be done. And there is no way they can do that. So you've got two defaults back to back almost within 3 weeks.
What about the earlier caller's question? She was suggesting that there are just two different economic cultures, and that this is the point at which they were going to collide. It kind of suggests that was inevitable. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, bottom line is, you know, we're in a new age here. You can call it the age of globalization, where a developed nation has to have certain things in order for markets to feel that the country is credible enough so they can lend money to it. And Greece had that chance when they joined the euro in 2001, where they could have taken on structural reforms, they could have fixed their political dysfunction, try to get a handle a little bit on the corruption, fix their taxes, fix their administrative and government system, and modernize, basically. They didn't do it. And now they're asking us to believe that they're going to do it. The bottom line is we need Greece, and this is unfortunate because you lose some of your cultural heritage, but I don't think anybody wants political dysfunction and corruption as a cultural heritage. But we really need Greece to be a little less Greek at this point.
Interesting. We have a call to that effect. Here's AJ, who's calling from Brookline, Mass. Massachusetts. AJ, what's your thought here?
Well, my thought is that I am really confirming the opinions of the previous caller, that the cause of the austerity is not the loans, it's the fact that the Greek leadership failed to implement the promises that they made in order to get the funds. There were three critical things that they were required to do, which they have not done. Reform the tax system. There's a great deal of tax evasion there. Modernize the productive facilities. Instead, what they did is to hire political followers, and they padded the bureaucracy. So therefore, all the money that was gone was gone to patronage and to maintain the old system that was dysfunctional. So I cannot blame anyone but the Greek leadership itself, and they've screwed the people.
Oh, AJ, thank you for your call. John Sotiropoulos, I understand that you're back with us. It's obviously this is not a scientific survey of opinion, but many of the people who are writing to us on Twitter and Facebook, and many of the people who are calling, share that view. For example, here's one comment from our website. I blame Greece for one-third for bad fiscal behavior and the Eurozone two-thirds for austerity, not thinking the euro through in the first place. Let's see. Here's another one. Steve in Vermont says, I'd like to believe Greeks have learned a lesson regarding fiscal responsibility, but generations of irresponsibility don't bode well for the future. I'd feel better if the majority of the population acknowledged their responsibility and showed a willingness to rectify this. So there are a number of comments to that end. Again, not scientific, but what do you say about that, John? Is there any willingness to offer that kind of self-reflection in the country at this point?
Well, of course, and Greeks amongst themselves openly discuss their own shortcomings, and they actually, you'll be surprised about the extent to which they agree with Scheherazade and some of your callers. I think, though, that we have to distinguish between primary and secondary problems. the no vote in the referendum, I think, was the result of the secondary problem, the problem that the original financial aid package to Greece was simply badly designed. It contained no restructuring of debt, as the International Monetary Fund had suggested that it should, because European lenders didn't want their banks to take a hit. The IMF said if you finance the Greeks at the full cost of their debt right now, they will not be able to afford to repay it. But the Europeans didn't want to listen. They wanted the financial aid package first and then deal with the unsustainability of the debt at some later date. Well, that later date came in 2012 when Greece, unsurprisingly, needed a second bailout loan. And then the restructuring of the debt was confined to the private sector. In other words, banks, individual investors, and institutions that owned debt, but not European taxpayers. So once again, the primary goal was to protect the taxpayer and, of course, the political standing of the government then in power in Europe, chief among them, Mrs. Merkel, who has long promised her taxpayers that they will never have to shoulder the cost of the Greek loan, that it will be repaid in full. The result of that debt restructuring was that because only the private sector shouldered it, about 80% of it fell upon the shoulders of Greek financial institutions. 50 billion euros had to be spent to bail out the Greek banks because of the amount of Greek bonds they held as collateral. And billions more were lost from Greek pension funds and universities and even hospitals and other sorts of foundations. So in fact, at every stage, I think the bailout has been botched and the austerity was very badly implemented by Greek governments so that it always fell upon the shoulders of salaried employees and the productive side of the economy. That is now a minority of the population. Only 3.5 million people are still working in a population of 11 million. They cannot take the weight of the taxes in order to pay off the debt and also to support the rest, you know, the other two-thirds of the population.
Let's get some other perspectives from our other guests before we have to take another short break. Christian Rickens?
Yes, I more or less agree with John. I think the aid packages were flawed in the beginning. Maybe I could just add a very short thought that you mentioned that maybe there's a Southern European culture and it's not really compatible with the euro. But there's also a problem with the Northern European culture here in some terms, because the word for debt in Germany is the same word as for guilt, and we really have this very morally loaded conception of being in debt. That means in the German language the same as being guilty, and that's why it's also like from a cultural standpoint, it's really hard to say for a German to say, yeah, we give you a full haircut, forget the debt, it's all waived. And maybe we need to change in that term, in that perspective.
It's interesting, though, that among the three of you, obviously, that there's a lot of overlap of perspective. Why is that lacking among the people negotiating this crisis? Very briefly, Christian, why do you think that is?
Well, clearly, John pointed it all out already. Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, she has a serious problem if she has to say, well, all the money we gave to Greece as a credit so far is now lost. That's altogether 60 to 80 billion euros for Germany. And being in the next election campaign and saying, yeah, I'm sorry, this money is all gone, okay, is a serious problem for her.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We are reflecting on the crisis in Greece. We're trying to figure out how bad this national bankruptcy could get, how it might affect Europe and beyond, how it gets fixed. We're talking also about culture. Is this about a little country not ready for 21st century capitalism? Is this also about the little guy pushing back at what does not work in 21st century capitalism? Is this an Occupy moment in Europe right now, or is there something about the culture of other European countries that needs to change in this new world economy? My guests are Scheherazade Rahman. She's director of the European Union Research Center and a professor of international business at George Washington University. In Athens, John Soropoulos joins us. He's a reporter and analyst who blogs on thenewathenian.com. And in Hamburg, Germany, Christian Rickens, head of the business and economic desk at Germany Spiegel Online. Before we took the break, Scheherazade, we were talking about a number of things here, whether the cultures of Northern Europe have to change as well. The economic sort of culture and mentality also has to change. And also some very strong views of listeners who feel very strongly that there needs to be kind of a new attitude of personal responsibility or collective responsibility about economic responsibility. Did you want to add your thoughts to this?
Sure. I think the first thing to remember is, you know, what a currency union really looks like. And it's like a chain. It's only as strong as its weakest link. And even a small country is too small to fail. And the bottom line is Greece really shouldn't have been part of the Eurozone in 2001. So I'll start off with that. And in response to some of the callers, look, there's no question that there was market failure here for 8 years almost, when the capital markets were giving Greece low interest rates, almost at the same rates as Germany, and they didn't assess the risk appropriately. So we know that happened. And that was followed by the European Central Bank and the EU muddling the entire crisis management of this financial crisis for 21 months. They didn't do anything until Mario Draghi came in to the European Central Bank and began real crisis management. So it's 21 months of muddling through. And then as the other speakers have pointed out, austerity was also mishandled. Too much austerity, too soon, zero growth. Now, that's all fine and dandy, and it's gotten us to this point. Now we have to deal with what we have in our hands. And the bottom line is this new government is a fringe government. Yes, it was democratically elected, but they are naive politically. And they actually believe that they had negotiation power coming into this. And they have made it absolutely impossible with this referendum now to move forward in any systematic way. They will have to take the deal that's on the table today. This referendum was at best a domestic political stunt, and on the worst, it was an extreme political naivete on their part to pull this off. So I think, you know, we are at a situation now where in the short run, this government has absolutely no choice. And I like to add, democracy is going to come to work again. This government has a very short shelf life. Either way, it's going to go. That's what I see down the road within, you know, easily within the next 12 months.
John, I feel I need to give you an opportunity to respond to that analysis.
I agree with Scheherazade that this government is not long for this world, and I agree with her that they have behaved very naively. But I think we also need to add that anti-austerity politics are now the politics of the day. Back in January, when Syriza was elected, they got only 36% of the vote. They didn't get an outright majority, that's true. But we haven't had single-party government since 2009 because the crisis has simply destroyed traditional power parties here, the socialists and the conservatives. It's no longer a two-party system. I would also add that if you look at the anti-austerity vote in total, it's about 53% of the vote in January. The pro-austerity parties, the ones that were willing to compromise with Europe, the ones that backed the yes vote in Sunday's referendum, back in January they got 38% of the vote, and on Sunday they got 36% of the referendum. This is no longer the way to go politically. You have got to stake your political future on a standing that somehow involves relief to the Greek people, not just in order to alleviate poverty and suffering, not just in order to rebuild social safety nets, such as the public health system, which is disintegrating, but also in order to rebuild the productive base of the economy. And yes, the Greeks have committed criminal mistakes in the past. That's the primary problem that people have been talking about on this show, the hiring of political clients into the state service, the civil service. the bloating of the payroll, and so on. But now, anyone who says, I'm going to stop spending 1.5 billion euros a month topping up pensions, subsidizing the pension system, because the pension funds are bankrupt, and anyone who says, I'm going to stop paying 1 billion euros a month paying state salaries, together, those two expenditures are more than 50% of the budget. It's about $33 billion out of the $55 billion budget. Anyone who says that is politically dead. So
Michelle, may I jump in here?
Sure. Scheherazade, go ahead.
Well, go ahead. Anyone who's actually to perform those tasks has to not be a politician.
Scheherazade, briefly, if you would.
Yeah, sure. You know, what has just been touched upon is really a larger issue. The bottom line is this austerity all over Europe, including the northern countries. You know, France has zero growth and they have to do austerity measures. So Greece really becomes what we call the canary in a coal mine. We are seeing all across Europe, you know, left or rightist parties, fringe parties coming into politics. 2017, Marine Le Pen does not have a shot at the presidency, but she has a shot of being part of a ruling coalition if things keep continuing in France the way they are. And that will change the political landscape of Europe.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I wanted to touch on in the time that we have left is that the economy is not the only issue, although it certainly addresses and speaks to and affects all the other issues. I just want to play a short clip from the German Chancellor Angela Merkel at the joint press conference with the French Prime Minister François Hollande yesterday. This is what she said. And I need to read the translation. What she's saying is that Europe can only hold together and stand together, which is very important in these times of immigration challenges, terrorism challenges, if each country takes responsibility for itself. And that raises the question, there is still a refugee crisis, if I can call it that, where people who are taking to the water, trying to move to, you know, soft borders, trying to flee both instability and real sort of economic disasters, you know, elsewhere. Greece is only a couple of hundred miles from the Balkans in the Middle East. It's a waypoint. You know, one has to ask, John, perhaps I'll ask you this first, if Greece faces the possibility of becoming a failed state.
Well, in many ways, it is a failed state. It's morally failed. It's politically failed. People look back on the last 40 years of government as a failure. There are still former prime ministers and politicians who, you know, are around. They're alive. And they keep quiet. They do not go on television. They do not allow themselves to be interviewed. They piped up for the referendum. But it was a little bit like, you know, a graveyard opening up, you know, as a politically dead people. I think that you could see more material failure. You are seeing it in a way. I mean, we've already seen a lot of a huge drop in the standard of living in the last 5 years. Greeks have lost at least a quarter of their income. I think it is going to get worse. Now, in terms of whether there's going to be a breakdown in law and order, I don't know. It's too early to tell.
Let me ask Christian Rickens, what are the prospects for, are there other kind of lines of negotiation that are opening up now that the situation, it is what it is, as we say here in the U.S., probably
well,
too
I'm
often.
Afraid,
but are there other sort of actors coming forward, or is there an opportunity there for other parties to reassert themselves to kind of change the dynamic? I mean, one of the things that we've been reminded of in the current crisis is that there used to be kind of more parity of influence, you know, particularly, say, with France, for example. And if they were able to kind of coalesce around a negotiation, then it was generally palatable to the rest of Europe. But with the kind of the rise of kind of German dominance, that creates its own dynamic. So is there anything likely to change the dynamic that might offer an opportunity for people to look at this problem anew?
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure about the German dominance. It's true Germany is the biggest economy within the European Union right now. But we have a majority decision system, so without the other countries, Germany has no say in this. And as we said earlier, Germany is not alone in its stand. It remains to be seen how France positions itself. But Right now, I'm learning that the Greek Minister of Finance, he came to the Eurogroup meeting today, which is just has just closed, without any new ideas for new negotiation. And I think it's very, very hard to find new allies or to open up a new line of negotiations if you do not propose anything. The problem right now is that really. Even the progressives in Germany and even the anti-austerity fraction in Germany, we just do not know what we should negotiate with on Greece because there are no proposals by them. And just the proposal, well, first wave our debt and then everything else remains to be seen. I'm afraid that's not viable. And here I can't really understand Angela Merkel.
Let's take one more call. Lisa is calling from El Paso, Texas. Lisa?
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. What's your thought about this?
Yeah, my thought is I tend to think that Greece would be better off outside the Eurozone. It's very dangerous to be a small country in a large currency union, particularly one that's designed like the Euro is, without a political union, without transfer payments. And if you look at the vote that happened Sunday with the Greeks, it was a very rational vote because the European institutions and the European leaders basically said, we've got a plan for you, Greece, and the plan is more austerity and no debt relief. Well, more austerity and no debt relief is what has led Greece, which has always been a mess economically, to what it is now, which is a catastrophe, both socially and economically. And I just want to add, Greece is in a position where in the 5 years that they've been taking the European medicine of massive tax increases and massive spending cuts, their economy has shrunk by 25%. Their unemployment started at around 10%. It is now over 24%. And their youth unemployment is over 50%. So no rational voters would say, yes, we want more of that. So I think it was an incredibly rational decision. And unfortunately, they need to get out of this currency union so they can devalue their currency. And yes, it will be very difficult in the short and maybe even midterm run. But if they stay inside the currency with these massive debts, they don't have the tools they need to get their economy back in shape.
Mm. Let's ask Scheherazade to take that question. Scheherazade Rahman, you heard Lisa from El Paso, Texas. She says Greece would be better off just leaving the Eurozone.
Honestly, I couldn't disagree more. It would be a death sentence for that economy. And I'm talking about decades and decades and decades of pain. Right now, while still staying in the euro, we can estimate that their two-year bond yields, i.e. the money that the Greek government can borrow over 2 years, is close to 50%. And that's an unbelievable amount of interest rate. The 10-year bond yields are close to 20%. If they have their own currency, a new drachma, call it whatever you want, the borrowing rates will be sky high. They're effectively locked out of the capital markets. And so you're going to talk about, you know, a country really becoming a failed state. Staying in the Eurozone is really the only lifeline that they have right now.
What are we likely to be talking about a year from now, Scheherazade? If we were to revisit this conversation, what are we likely to be talking about?
If there is no deal today, you're talking about a country that's going to go through enormous pain either way, and we're going to still talking about a better plan, a more medium-term plan for how Greece gets out of this. They're going to need another bailout. It's going to be close to $50 billion, but today or tomorrow, this short-term deal has to be signed in order for that to happen.
Christian, thoughts about that very briefly, if you would?
I would just love that we could focus on the real issues in Europe, and you mentioned the refugee crisis. I think we are forgetting a lot of important topics in Europe because we are dealing with Greece, with this, sorry to say, that relatively small country that keeps our minds occupied for too long now.
John, what about you? A year from now, what do you think we'll be talking about?
Well, I think we all know what has to be done. Greece has to get rid of at least half of its state payroll. It has to lower pensions further. There is simply no other way that the private economy can continue to stagger under the weight of those two bills. It is far too much money to pay for a very, very ineffective state machinery that really offers very little value to its citizens. If Mr. Tsipras had gone to Brussels with those sorts of ideas and had said, to balance out the cost of doing this. I'd like the 35 billion euro development package that Mr. Juncker promised the European Commission leader, and I'd like debt restructuring. He would then be inviting everyone to put everything on the table, and there I think you could have had a real deal, because at the moment there just isn't, I think, much time for half measures anymore. Nobody wants a deal that carries Greece, let's say, through to December, and then we have another discussion about whether Greece will be in the Eurozone in 2016. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there isn't the political will on the northern or the southern side of the Eurozone, certainly not here in Greece, to do what has to be done. So I do think that we need to brace ourselves for a drachma economy. I do not agree that it will be a disaster. I think that Greece can reorganize itself, and I remind you of the statements made by Dominic Strauss-Kahn, who said, don't give Greece more money that they just won't be able to repay. Don't allow them to take on more loans and increase their debt load. Instead, give them a two-year moratorium so that they can prepare their economy and turn it back into growth and repurpose it. Okay. And then give them 50 years. He didn't say 50. He said give them a lengthy debt restructuring.
We have to leave it there for now. It's been a sobering discussion, but a very good one, and we've touched on a number of important topics. So, John Sofropoulos, thank you so much for joining us. Reporter and analyst, he blogs at thenewathenian.com and contributes to NPR, joining us from Athens. From Hamburg, Christian Rickens, the head of the business and economic desk at Spiegel Online, and Scheherazade Rahman, director of the European Union Research Center, professor of international business at George Washington University from Washington, D.C. Thank you all so much for speaking with us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.